traveling the world searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Welcome, racing fans. I'm Steve Wolf, the host of Flying Turns for the International Equine Network, and with me, the founder of the of IEN, Scott Miller. And Scott, we got a lot of stuff to go over today, that's for sure.
Oh, Steve, I looked over the notes and boy, oh boy, oh boy, have you been busy.
Well, you know what? It's sort of like racing was canceled for a few months during the pandemic, and now it's come back, and it's like overpowering with so many stake races and tracks reopened now. It's an awful lot to follow. And more importantly, the Grand Circuit, which is some of the most prestigious races in the sport of harness racing, has kicked off, and the Meadowlands has got a major feature race this Saturday night, July 4th. But first, we want to recognize both the Meadowlands in New Jersey, because starting today, tonight's racing card, a special Thursday, they're going to have fans in the stands.
How many are they going to get in there, Steve?
They're allowed to have a 25% occupancy. Now, I don't know how that determines, but obviously, I don't know what the average attendance, because it's all free. They don't keep a count anymore. But I'm sure if they get hundreds of people to come, they're just going to have to make them socially distance themselves. And they've got Purell stands throughout the place. If you want to order food, you actually have to do it through one of the waitresses or waiters that they have, and they bring you the food. You have to go outside to eat it. You can't eat it inside. You're allowed to make sports wagers. There's going to be each of the betting lines to go make it have plexiglass windows and markings on the floor so everyone stays, you know, at least 6 feet apart. I mean, it's best practices, but we're glad that the fans will start being able to come out. And I'm sure everyone is going to abide by the rules because, and I want to add this because it's important, since Yonkers Raceway was the epicenter, the heart of the pandemic, that harness racing has come back. They've been able to show that they can race without fans, that they can race hopefully with fans and social distancing. And it's all coming back. But positively is what I'm trying to get at, is that none of the tracks that have started up racing, none of the drivers, trainers, owners, employees of all, let's say, 25, 26 harness racing tracks, not one coronavirus positive test.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, let me ask you, are they going to have the betting? It's going to be distance apart according to the plan. But will they have the girls or the guys that come down with the little machines to make wagers?
Yeah, I'm not sure if the Meadowlands is set up and doing that. I think people are going to they're going to bet on their cell phones, on their, if they bring their iPads, you know, that they have their accounts set up in New Jersey, or they're going to be able to go to a betting window. And for the few sports, other national sports that are taking place, and this could be soccer or highlight or whatever's available, for sports wagering, they're going to have that too. So you'll be able to do it that way, you know, just racing. But, and I know, you know, some people are into the soccer over in England and Europe, and they'll be able to wager on that, you know, at the Meadowlands because they have the sports wagering. And also coming back with fans in the stands is Hoosier Park. And they're going to do their social distancing with 25% occupancy starting Saturday night, July 4th.
Well, that'll be good for Hoosier because the Breeders' Crown's there this year in the fall, so that should give them the plenty of time to work all the kinks out.
Well, that's what it is. In other words, unless they come up with, you know, cases of coronavirus because of they're allowing fans in the stands, but my feeling is that with no one testing positive in the last couple of months, that they're going to have the protocols in place and everything should be fine. At least that's what we're hoping for. And there's going to be some great racing action, too, that the fans are in store for if they go to the Meadowlands, because Saturday night is the richest stake race of the year so far in harness racing. It's a $170,000 Arthur Cutler Memorial. It's a free-for-all trot. There's 11 horses in this eighth race feature, and two of them, who happen to both be mares, are two of the greatest mares in harness racing, Manchego and Atlanta, and they're going to continue their rivalry.
Oh, Atlanta, I tell you what, Steve, Atlanta's turned out to be a very, very tough horse. Had a lot of
She's absolutely. She had a problem last year a little bit with tying up and stuff, but when she's right, she's very, very good. And these two mares, they Manchego's undefeated. She's in two starts. Atlanta has one start and was second. But that second was by a whisper of a nose to Manchego at the Meadowlands. They went in 150 flat, and Atlanta just got nipped. So the tide, the tables could be turned on Saturday night, but there's 11 horses in the field. Most of them are male older trotters, but these two mares, they show that they can beat the boys. One of the horses to look for in this race is Chin Chin Hall. He's had three starts for trainer Nifty Norman so far. They were all third place finishes, and they were all great efforts. First over, park the mile efforts. Chin Chin Hall just getting beat last week by Chimpanzee, who is not in the race. I'm surprised. I think he's elected to race just against the four-year-olds for now, because he would probably be the number one trotter in the United States right now, except when he takes on Atlanta and Manchego, which is going to happen. It's going to make for great racing. And that's what the sport is all about, to have two world-class mares going at each other and then taking on the boys. It's summertime. It's Grand Circuit. It's what racing, if you're into racing at all, this is what's going to be the best racing.
Well, how's the whole card look, Steve? Is it a good card?
You know what? It's very, because they also have the graduate pacing series for four-year-olds, and there are three divisions of the graduate. They each go for $50,000, so that's no chump change in harness racing. The first division is headed by the mare, Wari Ubru, who didn't finish well in her first start, but you know, granted that, she's still the 3-1, actually second choice in the race, because she goes against the undefeated Hurricane Emperor, who's been impressive, and he's got two straight wins last week, winning in 148-1, which was a super mile, considering it's only his second start back in 148-1 on a 5/8 mile track to boot. That's almost like a 46 mile at the Meadowlands. And if the weather holds true, and it's a good night for racing, between Wari Ubru and Hurricane Emperor will be a heck of a race. And that's just in the fourth race. So then in the sixth race is another division of the graduate, $50,000, and that features Century Pharaoh against Southwind Ozzy and Dancing Lou. Dancing Lou is undefeated two-year-old. He had a great season. He's already got a win this year in 148-3. I think this time off, Scott, has just brought these horses back so strong that they're going in their second start, they're going in 148 in a piece.
Yeah. Well, you know, when they left out of Sunshine Meadows here, you know, to go mm-hmm. up north, I talked to several of the trainers, you know, and Tony Alanya and Peter Wren. They said they thought their horses were, you know, a little stronger, had a little more foundation underneath them, and they were looking for good things to happen. So, evidently,
exactly.
You know,
I mean,
they were right on it.
You're right. You're spot on with that. And they just, like you said, they've got a better foundation, and that means they're ready and they can go these kind of miles. Hopefully, they can take, you know, keep it up. But on Saturday at the Meadowlands, there's a third $50,000 division. And in there is the three-year-old pacer of the year last season, Better's Wish. Now, he finished third in his first start back. He's already won in a qualifier in 149-2, so hopefully he's going to do better. But, again, he's in against two top horses in Best in Show and Working on a Mystery. So it's going to be real interesting, and Working on a Mystery just won in 150 flat. I mean, your second starts are going 148 in the piece, 150. It's super miles. So that makes four major stake races, Grand Circuit on the Meadowlands card Saturday night. So they're definitely a top choice for watching and wagering.
How are the owners going to figure into this, Steve, as far as they're going to have to stay at home and watch it? No.
The Meadowlands is allowing fans in the stands, so that means the owners can come. I guess my question I haven't been addressed yet is the winner's circle. I mean, is everyone going to stand shoulder to shoulder and then separate by 6 feet, or are they going to be too happy with a victory and want to hug everybody and ruin it? But I know everyone has to have a mask, and that includes the drivers.
I heard the track photographer got a wide angle lens, because if you get 10 people in the winner's circle, that's going to have to be 60 feet wide.
That's right. But you know what? The photographers are used to it. When they have to shoot the winner's circle for, let's say, the Hamiltonian, and there's 35 people in it, they know how to stack them and do everything else. And it'll be interesting. I mean, that's something for fans to watch and see, because as of late, there hasn't been any fans, so there hasn't been any winner's circle photos. I mean, the horse and driver might pass by and they take a picture, but there hasn't been any owners or trainers or fans or guests, and now they're going to be able to go into the winner's circle. So it'll be interesting Saturday night to see the coverage, or at least even tonight at the Meadowlands, to see the coverage and see how they're tracking everybody.
Right. Well, I've been watching the qualifiers from Woodbine on IEN, and let me tell you, they got a lot of horses, Steve. It seems like that there's not going to be a shortage of horses.
Definitely. Definitely, you know, there's no right now. The only track that I see that's having some trouble is up in Quebec, and they actually race with not head to head, but they race, you know, for horses. They share them between Rideau Carlton in Ottawa and Three Rivers in Quebec, and they've got some six horse fields. You know, their first week they were jam packed with horses, but now that they're racing 2 days a week, they're a little weak on it. But Yonkers, Meadowlands, Hoosier Park, all the other tracks that are back open, they've got full fields, because you know what? I think everybody has either laid up or got foundation, as you said, on their horses, so that they're ready to go. And that's why there's, you know, most everyone has full fields.
Yeah. Well, what about the drivers? How are the drivers dealing with this? Because they're the ones that seem to be exposed to the most people involved in the business, same as the jockeys in the thoroughbred end of it. Because they go from barn to barn, horse to horse.
Well, they do, in the race paddock, they're pretty strict on, you know, where they can go. And, of course, they can talk with other people. But if you notice, every driver in the race is either wearing a mask or has a mask that is dropped down. I mean, so that they can breathe more freely while they're driving. But once they get back to the paddock, they got to put the mask back on. They have to get a little bit of contact with the different trainers and grooms that are, you know, when they get off the horse and they hook up the lines and things like that. But they're going to do their best social distancing practicing. And, you know, we'll have to see how it goes tonight. It'll be interesting to see how they treat it, you know, with the winner's circle. And hopefully they won't be too bad. But I know that when I was having horses, and my horse won. I was always jumping for joy in the winner's circle and wanted to hug or shake hands with the driver and trainer and whoever else. And people just have to remember not to do it, you know, just to try and stay away. They can still jump up and down and wave their hands in excitement, and as long as they don't lose their betting tickets. But, the idea of hugging and doing things is going to have to be waylaid until the virus gets under control.
You know, in a horse business, a lot of times you'll have like one bridle, and you know, you'll dip it in disinfectant, you know, and use it on another horse. And I talked to some friends in the tack shop business who said their business really, you know, doubled and tripled because what they've done now, and the way it should always be, the way we always did it, is every horse had his own bridle, his own, you know, everything. And,
That's understandable, but I mean, I don't want to get into the debate of self-practicing, but you're absolutely right. I mean, somebody like the drivers always wear gloves, so that's a more positive thing. But if somebody breathes on a bridle or breathes on the lines, and then somebody grabs them to do something with them. Yeah, the disease can be transferred that way. So, you know, again, it's you got to keep a mask on. You got to keep gloves on if you can. You got to keep washing your hands. If you touch something, you clean it off. And that's what's the best practices you can do and hope for the best. I mean, I think it's great that harness racing can boast that there hasn't been one coronavirus positives, you know, in the last 3 months that they've started up racing. I mean, it was very bad, of course, in the beginning, but they've made up for it now. And as we said before, the Grand Circuit, the top horses are racing and coming back. And that includes the 2019 Dan Patch Harness Horse of the Year, Chardonnay. She came back for the second time this year, raced on Tuesday at Yonkers Raceway in the Filly and Mares Open, where she went against rival Caveat Alley, and Chardonnay post-8 didn't affect her at all. Kim Petrick got away fourth with her as Caveat Alley went to the front. And then after an easy half mile, Brian Sears pulled on the right line, and here comes Chardonnay, and she collared Caveat Alley at the three quarters. And then at the top of the stretch, put her away. She went on to win with ease by almost 3 lengths and 152. So there's that mare is super tight.
Yeah. But, you know, I talked to several owners out here in the last couple of weeks, and it was very interesting. One of the owners said he was glad he didn't sell his horses. He said, because, you know, it's coming back. And then another one of the owners, which I'm not going to name his name, he said he shouldn't have sold his horse. You know, because he bailed out.
In the beginning, people were doing that. Remember, and we've had numerous times on our shows where we've talked about the different online auction houses and how a lot of horses, but primarily the reason a lot of good horses were being sold and bringing good money was because of the indictments.
Right.
On the trainers and stuff, Renee Allard, Chris Oaks, Zurich, you know, all their horses were getting transferred to, the owners were taking them and getting transferred to other trainers so that they'll be able to race them, or they were selling them, and they brought good money, and the reason is evident that the racing is strong, the purses are there to be won, and now that they've missed a few months of racing, they want to make up for lost time and get the money while they can, and the horses are racing great with it.
But Steve, I got another question for you here on the Little Brown Jug. To me, when I was growing up as a kid, and I'd see Haywood Halebrune, and I'd watch it on CBS, and you know, it was just such an exciting day of racing to watch. You know, the people, the fair, you know, the horses, the interviews. How are they going to do the Little Brown Jug this year if they don't have the fair and the people?
Well, we're waiting for a word, and they actually, the Little Brown Jug Society at the Delaware County Fair in Delaware, Ohio, they're, I guess, being precautious and going ahead with full steam. Will they have 30, 40,000 fans come out? I don't think so. I don't think there's enough time by that third week in September, the way things are going, that the country's going to be able to open up to a state fair. And, of course, the big question is, if there is no state fair, or I'm sorry, county fair at the grounds, which is a huge, huge, beautiful, wonderful fair that goes with the racing, you know, they're just going to have it. And with 25% occupancy, I'm not sure. I mean, I can't see a fair being able to open. I mean, you're going to need, instead of one person to run the Ferris wheel, you're going to need five, because they've got to clean every gondola that the people get in after each person rides.
Right.
I mean, these are questions that are going to get answered, but I don't know what the answers are.
You know, I think what's happened, Steve, is in an odd way, the management, and not taking anything away from management, I think in an odd way, it's kind of correcting itself. It's kind of, you know, making it happen, you know, through sheer, you know, trial and error. I think we got some pretty smart people in management all throughout the horse industry. And it seems to carry over to the thoroughbreds, the show horses, you know, the rodeo, standardbreds, you know, the whole nine yards. And they're finding success. You know, whether it was planned or unplanned, it's working. So, you know,
you're 100% right. I mean, it's almost like a tip of the hat. We want to, you know, tip our hat in congratulations to all the horse breeds, because it is the only major league professional sport that has been able to successfully come back, first without fans, but self-practice or, you know, best practice taking place to have the racing or the events. I've seen the rodeo with nobody in the fans, just the workers and the, what do you call it, the bullfighters,
right.
You know, making sure that the cowboys competing are all, you know, safe and everything. And we've seen it with the equestrians. I mean, they can run their shows. They can have everybody go. And it's a real positive testimonial to the horse industry on how they've been able to come back and do everything proper, while places like baseball, basketball, and things like that, which could easily be done on TV without fans, is
right.
Still not come back. But yet racing
right.
has in a big way.
Well, you know, when we shipped horses, when I find horses with Enstone, every time we loaded a plane, we would come in and the plane was disinfected with a chemical called New Life. And you would spray it on all the containers, any and everything that was on that plane, you sprayed it with. And same thing when you took it down. And so I know a lot of trainers now have been disinfecting their stalls, you know, any time they transport the horses on the ground, you know, they're disinfecting them. And I think that's helped a lot as far as transmitting, you know, the virus, because every time we turn around now in the business, you know, protocol says disinfect, you know, barrier and disinfect. And I think it's working. So what I'm excited about is the television coverage that's starting to come around. You know, you can just about watch races from anywhere, any way, shape, or form now. And I think that's really going to help the OTD.
Well, you know what? You're 100% right, except in some cases, the tracks are doing everything that they can, but they just don't have the fan appeal or interest for wagering as the major league tracks do.
Right.
In other words, a track like Three Rivers up in Little Quebec handles $40,000 on an 8-race card, whereas the Meadowlands handles $4 million on a 12 race card or a 15 race card because they're trying to get everything up. It's an awful lot. I mean, $4 million, that represents over, you know, over $100,000 in income to the track, just the 3%, which can help cover purses for the night. Whereas a track like Three Rivers that has, you know, $30,000 in purses and they're only making, $10,000. I mean, it's a losing proposition, but they've got to race. And if they don't race, they're not going to have anything going on. So they've got to, this season, a lot of tracks, smaller tracks are going to have to bite the bullet where the larger tracks are making money. Gulfstream Park has probably made more money now. They could stop the season now for the year and they're going to end up in a positive. And, or what's the other one? Fodder Park.
Yeah, Fodder Park. That's the best year they've ever had.
They had last year. They had 5 days of racing. They did $3.5 million, which isn't bad.
Right.
But this year, I think they expanded it to 30 days of racing, and handled $35 million.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's like with Thoroughbreds. Naira Betts is an OTB, and today, they were watching America's Best Racing, again, like I said, on IEN. And they have a deal that if you deposit $200 in a Naira Betts account, they match the $200. So you're going to get an account starting with $200, but you're going to have $400 to bet with. And
well,
a lot of the OTBs are doing this.
I can understand that, but the sad part is, unless you are a new resident in New York, I don't think you can get into the system and bet in Naira. And individual states do that, and it's tough. I know in New Jersey, they're right now they're trying to get it set up so that New Jersey residents will be allowed to wager on New Jersey races on the New Jersey system, even when they're not in the state, which, you know, that's been a big problem.
Right. Well, you know, I tell you, there's always a way to bet on the horse.
Right.
There's always
and usually the best way is with a bunch of your friends. You can go to the racetrack, even if you're not betting directly on the horse. I can remember going to the fairs in New Jersey, the county fairs. And there was no wagering, but between my father and the cronies that were there, we used to all put up either a dollar or, depending on how everyone's feeling, $5, and everyone got to try and pick the horse that would finish last.
Yeah. Well,
so
you
it gets a little bit of excitement.
You got to do like I do when I go to my local sports bar, watering hole here, when I go in and sit down.
Right.
Get ready to order my drink, and I tell them I want a cheeseburger platter, $20 cheeseburger platter across the board.
Yeah.
Never had a cheeseburger, but got a lot of winnings out of that.
Well, there you go. Enough winnings to pay for that $20 cheeseburger.
Oh, yeah, you got that right. Well, you know, who else is going to be really gearing it up in the standardbreds for the state races other than the Meadowman?
Well, the Meadows out in Pittsburgh, they've got some Grand Circuit Courier and Ive races this weekend. So obviously, you know, they're back into the swing of things big time. It's only a question of when in Pennsylvania that they'll allow fans to come back to the races. Because people have to always remember that when you're simulcasting, and that's the only way you can wager, the track is only making about 3%. And there's talk about trying to divide this money up better so that the horsemen and the tracks can get more money for their purses and stuff so that, you know, they can salvage the season to some degree.
Yeah.
But that's going to hopefully happen. But fans, you know, they need to remember that if you're on track but wagering that $2, that comes out to they can make a 20% profit on it as opposed to 3%. So you always want to have that on track over everything else. And oh, Scott, yeah. before we switch, boy, we've already burned up the first half hour. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Before we switch over to the thoroughbreds, I want to add one more thing, and that is by Saturday night, the U.S. Harness Riders Association, working with a Facebook gentleman by the name of Scott Allberg, runs a free contest, handicapping contest. And this week's contest is going to be on the Cutler Memorial, Manchego in Atlanta. And fans have to, there's 11 horses in the race, but they have to pick the exacta, which I think is either going to be one mare over the other. But the winner's going to get a USTA copy of the Care and Training of the Trotter and Pacer. And they're also going to get a copy of the Bill Heller novel on Billy Houghton, which is a great, great read. And those two books alone are worth, you know, $50-$60. Plus, there's going to be other items in the swag bag. And three lucky prize winners are going to each get one of those swag bags from the courtesy of the Harness Racing Museum and Hall of Fame. So
how do they enter for you?
Well, they need to look on the usharnesswriters.com website and on Facebook on Scott Allberg's page, because by tonight they're going to have the race program for you to look at, along with all the rules for the contest. I believe the entries have to be in by 6 o'clock on Saturday night, but they'll have Thursday night all day Friday and Saturday to make their mind up on who they want to pick for the selection. But it's a great free contest that everyone should take a shot at. All they have to do is go to usharnesswriters.com or on Facebook to Scott Allberg's page, and they'll be able to enter the contest and see all the details tonight.
Right. You know, another thing, Steve, that we forgot to thank is the people from Harness Link. We're going to be using them as all our information, you know, pretty much for the harness industry to keep up to speed and up to date with them. Fantastic website. It goes all over the world. It's got a pretty good writer in there called Steve Wolf, I think.
That's right. And Harness Link, and I'm real proud to be associated with it and to be back on board. I was laid off for almost over 2 months during the pandemic, but now that racing's back and we have anywheres from 20 tracks or more that are submitting stories, whether they're advances or coverage of the races that took place. And my job is posting everything from Europe and from North America. So from, you know, when I get up in the morning until midnight, I can post anywheres from 25 to 35 different articles. So Harness Link really covers everything. In fact, it's all harness racing. If there's racing, you know, pony harness races in Bermuda, Harness Link has a story. If it's the big races down in Brazil or Argentina, Harness Link has stories about it. And of course, all right. of Europe and down under, Australia, New Zealand, Harness Link actually was developed by John Curtin out of Auckland, New Zealand, and it's extensive. No website in the world has more harness racing diversity coverage than Harness Link.
Right, and that's what makes it good for us, you know, because we can, you know, get all of our listeners to go there, you know, and they can find out whatever they need to find out. And another person or, you know, company that kind of linking up with is here at Sunshine Meadows, where I work here. It's the premier trotting training center in the country. We have some of the best trainers and world champions and Hamiltonian winners that train here in the wintertime, 3 months out of the year. And we also have the show horses and the riding horses. So we're starting to put together a good team of information, you know, that I think it's really going to make it enjoyable for, you know, our listeners.
No, you've done a great job on the website. And race fans, if you want information, if you want to see live races, if you want to know about the bull riding schedule or equestrian events, all you do is go to IENTV.org, and Scott's got it all up there. In fact, including, I saw the other day, you had the live auction going on.
Right, yeah, we had from England, from the UK, we had Golf's live auction run, and we've got other auctions coming in. We've got some coming in from Australia, Ireland, the UK. Those will be coming along here in the next, all of the next 30 days, Steve. Everything is just exploding in the horse business.
And the online auctions have developed so fast and for thoroughbred and harness racing that it's the way of the future. And yet they're still allowing, I think, 25% occupancy at the horse sale. So people, you know, that want to go can get in there. They're probably, you know, if too many want to go. I mean, at this point here, you know, for the Lexington sales for Harrisburg, I mean, they may end up, you know, allowing just the people that are going to buy horses, and the connections of the people selling them may be the only ones allowed in.
Right.
Everyone else will have to do it online.
I was just going over the schedule that we're putting together here for the next 2 weeks. And we have, today we had Talking Horses live from Belmont. We got America's Day Races live from Belmont today. We had the golf breeze up sale, as they call it, in England yesterday. We got the OBS 2-year-old sales coming up. The Under Tax show starts on July 6th and runs through the 11th. We have the Tattersall Geddes Breeze-Up sale from New Market on July 8th. We have Fazzie Tipton July 2nd Selected Horses Racing Age sale July 13th. And then we go to Japan for the Japan Select sale of yearlings in Wien. So, you know, we're going to be seeing horses like, from California Chrome and, you know, a lot of American stallions, you know, are bred horses over there. And these are all live, you know, on our website. And then now we've got Keeneland opening up here in the next week. We've got Saratoga. We have Del Mar opening up. You know, have a lot of big graded stake races in the Saratoga meet. Is the one that we're all really, I mean, we're excited about all of them. But on August the 8th, we'll see Tis the Law that won the Belmont make his return to racing, and he'll be in the Run Happy Travers Stakes. And then that will be his preparation for the Kentucky Derby.
So that's just a month away, but... Yeah,
right.
all eyes in the horse racing world is going to be watching the Travers.
Oh, you got that right. You know, and I tell you another one, too. A lot of the horses that ran into Belmont, you know, on July 11th, we got the $600,000 Toyota Bluegrass Stakes, you know, which is coming up here pretty quick. And there's a lot of trainers that are going to try to use that as a prep for the Derby. It's still a little far out. But, you know, not without, it could be done, you know, and that's what everybody...
Absolutely, and people have to remember that usually the Derby's the first race, and it features up to and usually 20 horses in the race. And then after the Derby is when these horses would then pick and choose, you know, which special stakes they want to go to. But now the tide has turned because of the pandemic. And the Travers now, it looks like the big race for Tis the Law. Now, let me ask you, if Tis the Law stays good and goes into the Derby, then he's going to go in the Preakness and then
right.
the Breeders' Cup, or would he skip the Preakness?
No, I think, Steve, I think that this horse is a good horse. Barkley Tag and Robin have this horse spot on. And he seems to recover very well from his racing.
Right.
You know, he's back to the track within a few days, you know, and he's really feeling good. And I think, to be honest with you, I think that this scenario that we're in now sets it up perfect for him to come back to win the Travers, come back, win the Derby, win the Preakness, and the Classic which he would run in, and the Breeders' Cup would be against older horses. But you got to remember one thing. He is an older horse now. That young horse is out of him. He's an older horse now.
Well, let's look at Tis the Law. Theoretically, he's going to make 5 starts this year, which is fine for a thoroughbred 3-year-old.
Right.
He can make more starts. But all he has to do is he wins his 5 starts, that's it. He's right. The greatest horse in the last 20 years.
You got that right. And, you know, the interesting thing about it is, if Barkley Tagg is the kind of man and trainer and horseman that teaches his horses to recover. A lot of trainers point a horse towards a race. The Barkley teaches them and schools them to recover from the race. And the way things are will be spaced out, you know, you're looking at Travers coming up August the 8th. Then you're looking 4 weeks later, you're looking at the Derby. And then 4 or 5 weeks after that, you're looking at the Preakness. And then 4 weeks after that, you're looking at the Breeders' Cup. So I think that they might have him in sync and have him on a good schedule.
Yeah, then he might want to say, oh, well, forget, let's not go back to, let's keep this tradition going. Because then again, in those 5 starts, he would earn well over $3 million, and his breeding worth and stuff is going into the tens of millions.
Well, you know, I what you just said about, you know, keep it like it is, you know, I'll tell you what, if there's a lot of success with these horses and you know, the horse schedule, you know, there's going to be a lot of trainers out there and say, hey, what about next year? You know, let's do it again just to make sure.
Well, we have to hope, and I'm sure the plans are going to be for next year, that they'll be able to have 80,000, 100,000 fans come out to the races. I mean, we can only hope, you know, for next year to be back in that situation. And because that's an awful lot of ancillary money being left on the table, you know, for these major stake races.
Well, you know, Steve, I'll tell you something that we're going to keep a good eye, close eye on here as we get in towards, you know, the Derby and the rest of them. On July 16th at Saratoga, there's the Peter Pan Stakes. It's a grade 3, 100,000 added for 3-year-olds going 1 mile and 1/8. And I'm going to watch that race real close, because I think you might have a new shooter come out of that race that'll go right on to the Travers, you know, 3 weeks later. You know, that's going to be really a good race to watch. And there's a lot of races, you know, that are out there and available prior to the Travers that, you know, some new shooters could, you know, kind of test their horse. And if they do good, you know, go for it. And it's going to be this way all the way through August and September. You know, we're looking at, you know, $100,000, $200,000 races every day at Del Mar, Keeneland, and Saratoga. And then when Arlington Park opens up, you know, you're looking at a whole nother ballgame there. So I think it's going to make a lot of good horses to run for the Derby. And so, you know, it's back on track now, as they say. It's the real deal.
Exactly. It's things are getting back on track. Everyone, you know, another credit to the horse industry. Every protocol that's thrown at them, they met it and then some, so that they can open and get racing going again. Except I've been trying to find out now, and I haven't heard back from the powers that be. I'm wondering with Yonkers and all these other tracks opening, what's the story with Monticello Raceway? They have not announced anything, and they're not open.
You know, it's funny that you said that. I had 2 people ask me this morning about Monticello. And they said, you know, that they go there, they were going every year, and they haven't heard a thing.
And the New York Sire Stakes has started with the 3-year-olds, and the 2-year-olds will be getting underway shortly. And that's another important leg of series of races that the horsemen can go for.
Correct. Right.
But not if they're not open. And, you know, I was hoping to hear back from the general manager of racing, Sean Wiles, about what the status is or the outlook, and I haven't heard anything back yet.
Well, speaking of Monticello there, Steve, what's the status at Saratoga Harness at night? Now, they're up and running.
Yes, they're racing, and yeah. Tioga's racing, and Pocono Downs is back racing. I mean, literally, all the tracks are back except for Monticello and Plainridge. And Plainridge has announced that they need to get all their protocols in place, and they're going to open hopefully by the 12th of July. So that's less than 2 weeks away. They're having qualifiers now, but yeah, they're going to get back on track. It's Monticello that we haven't heard anything about.
Yeah, well, you know, it's kind of funny. I think Saratoga is going to be the proving ground, you might want to say, for the horse industry, because they've got a lot of horse shows in the Saratoga area, you know, in the summertime. But you got to realize that you can go over to Saratoga to the Flats or the Thoroughbreds at 11 o'clock and watch races up until 5:30, 6 o'clock. Then you can walk straight across the street to Saratoga and Harness and watch harness racing till 10 or 11 o'clock at night, you know.
That's
and,
right.
And if they're making it work at those two tracks, then, you know, it's going to be a good to go thing.
I think it's going to happen, and it's going to be fine, because so far, in the midst of all the rise in pandemic cases, coronavirus cases, the horse racing tracks have not reported any people, you know, coming up positive.
Right.
And this is, again, all over the country, actually all over North America.
Right. And you know, the odd part about it is every one of those tracks, well, let's say, for example, if you go to watch a football game, you know, it's pretty much to the local people that are in that town, like, say, Denver, and then if Cincinnati comes to play them, you'll have a handful of them, you know, be from Cincinnati. But in the horse business, it doesn't matter whether it's harness, thoroughbred show, or whatever, you got people coming from all over the world to show, to race, you know, to sell, to buy. And that's one thing that people really forget about the horse business. You know, it's just not a local thing. It's everybody.
Right.
From everywhere.
They're looking at it, and they're watching it from all over the world on the computers, and if they can, making their wagers. But you're absolutely right. I mean, when a track opens, the town flourishes because there's so many people coming in there that need to use the restaurants and services and to the like and spend money in the town. And that's what it's all about.
We had a couple of standard bred trainers and two show horse trainers that were going up to Connecticut and New Jersey. They left yesterday, actually. And what happened is they closed them down to the 14-day quarantine. So, you know, 2 weeks ago, that wasn't in effect, you know, and now they leave yesterday and they find out that they have to be quarantined for 14 days when they get up there. You know?
That's right.
And it's going to be tough, you know, on them. And so if you're where you're at, stay. Don't go nowhere.
Well,
deal
there you are,
you
but
in
some cases, you got to take care of your horses, or at least make sure they're being cared for properly, and if they're racing, that everything's taken care of, because the trainer can't go. He's got to sit in tight. That's the business about traveling, especially if you're leaving from Florida. I mean,
right
now, United States can't even fly to any of the European countries because we don't have the virus under control, and individual states, you know, are making the requirements. If I wanted to go to New Jersey right now, yeah, I'd have to go in my brother's house and stay there for 2 weeks and not go any place, which wouldn't be a bad thing because I'd get some nice Jersey corn.
Yeah, there you go.
I miss the Silver Queen, and July 4th weekend is usually when it first comes out, and they had a lot of rain up in the Northeast, and to me, when it rains a lot, that just makes the corn even sweeter.
Oh, yeah. Well, I loved it at Monmouth Park on 4th of July. Where I lived at, I was 5 blocks off the ocean, and go to a nice day of races, you know, at Monmouth there. And then at nighttime, we could go down to the beach, and you could see all the fireworks from the city. You know, and it was quite a spectacular show, you know, to see that. And also, you know, but like I was saying, you know, people are coming from everywhere. And the thing that I'm thinking now with our jockeys and for the trainers and owners, it's a difficult decision to make because, if you got, you know, which I know a gentleman's got a horse that's going to be running in Delmar, and, you know, he's, well, I'm going out for the $500,000 TVG Classic, and he's got two other horses that he's sending out, so he's going to send the jockey out, but the jockey's coming from New York. So, you know, usually when they do that, the jockeys will fly out the day before and, you know, leave the night of the race, you know, or the next day and come back.
Right.
So now that's really affecting who rides your horses, you know, and where
you go.
Well,
let's give an instance right now. Gulfstream Park is open. I don't know if he's riding there or not, but one of the top jocks in the country that performs there is Joe Bravo. He's always been the leading jock, or one of the leading jocks,
right,
at Monmouth Park.
Right.
So is he going to be able to, I mean, I don't know what the situation is, unless he's gone up there already to beat the quarantine. Not beat it, but at least get the 14 days in that he can't ride, you know, and I guess, you know, pick a, it's tough to pick 2 weeks that, you know, aren't going to have major stake races. But then if he leaves New Jersey to go someplace else, will he get quarantined again?
Well, yeah, that's something you got to think about because Joe's a good rider. And mm-hmm. like you said, he's one of the best at Gulfstream and one of the best at Monmouth. But there's a lot of times, like when the Keeneland meet's getting ready to open up, you know, and Joe usually, you know, he rides quite a few at Keeneland during the Keeneland meet, which is in the spring normally. And then, you know, he's riding at Saratoga and Monmouth. You know, he'll go back and forth between the two tracks. So I'm going to have to check out that.
You know what? I think you need to contact Joe and get him on the show next week and answer these questions live.
Yeah. That's a good idea. I believe I'll do that. I'll call him and ask him to see if he's gonna, you know, what he's going to do.
Right, because I think he'll come on and talk to the fans and tell us what the situation is, because Monmouth Park is opening this weekend. And I haven't even looked yet to see if he's they must have drawn for the weekend card, so just to see if he's already there.
Yeah.
But one way or the other, that's our quest for next week, is to get Joe Bravo on the show.
And one of the exciting things that I'm looking forward to is we've got a friend of mine from Churchill Down. She is going to tell us all about the brand new starting gate at Churchill. It's a solid 20-stall starting gate. And they don't have
to see the tractor that's going to pull it.
Yeah. Well, you know, like she was telling me, she said, if the tractor goes down, said, you know, we can't uncouple the auxiliary gate and get anybody around. It covers the whole width of the track.
Well, you know? Just tell the jockeys that if the gate is there when you come around that turn, then it's an obstacle race, and they just have to maneuver through their post position, and because if they go through another post position, they'll be taken down and squeeze through that gate real nice and ginger and then race down the stretch.
Well, I tell you, I know if I had a jockey up there in that situation, I'd have somebody from Jersey would be like going through the toll booth on the parkway. I've seen those guys
there
in the toll booth like there's no tomorrow.
That's right.
But No, see, we got a lot of good stuff coming up, and great thing about it is now is, you know, we've got a lot of live action with the live racing from, you know, the horses and at the shows, and the live racing from standardbreds and the thoroughbreds, and I'm trying to get as many of the live programming as I can up on the website, and it's starting to work for us. You know, the thing that really surprised me were the horse sales. You know, Kingland sales starting up, OBF sales starting up. And they have, at this time of year, what they have, what they call, you know, the breeze up shows are the breezing shows here in the state. And you can actually watch each horse individually breeze 3/8 of a mile under, you know, under a
I was shot. Watching it yesterday at the horse sale, showing these horses, and then their breezing test, you know, which is pretty much like a warm-up, you know, going a good quarter mile just to show. And these horses, some of them, they look fabulous. They were like, wow, I want to bid on this one. And you could buy them and get them ready to race, and, you know, as long as you had $150,000.
Right. Well, see, what they've done now is they kind of hit the magic formula with it is they show the breeze shows, you know, or under saddle shows, as they call them here in the state. And you can watch that, and then they bring them back, you know, a few days later for the auction. And what a lot of these owners are doing online is they watch them on TV in the breeze show. Then after they did their breeze, they send a veterinarian out. They vet the horse out. They have somebody physically look at the horse, you know, and see how he recovered from it, and then they go online to bid. And it's quite a process, but a lot of the owners are excited about it, you know, because they don't like to be there. There are some owners, they don't want you to know that they're bidding on horses, like Sheikh Muhammad. He's got a special room built for himself at King, and it's got a mirrored glass, and you don't know if he's bidding or not, but, the bid will go up. And everything. So I think what's happened is this pandemic might, you know, as far as the horse business is concerned, and I hated that all the people got sick and died, but it might have helped the horse business, you know, a lot.
Well, it'll be interesting. And that practice of hiding who's doing the bidding, that's been wrong for a long, long time, because I remember back in the early 1960s, my grandfather would take me. I had to be maybe 5 or 6 years old, would take me because my father and my grandfather, they purchased the cattle at auctions for the Cross Brothers company that was the biggest slaughterhouse for cattle in all of Philadelphia. And we needed to send them anywheres from 150 to 300 head of cattle a week, and we weren't the only ones buying, you know, animals for them. But my grandfather used to take me along, let me have a hamburger, fries, and a Coke for lunch, and then hang out and watch him play cards till the cattle came up for sale, and then he would make me sit on his knee, either the left knee or the right knee, so that I was blocking other bidders from seeing if he was bidding on animals. And I'd watch him do his fingers at the guy and, you know, tell him, you know, do certain motions to get his attention and then get the bidding. And then if somebody else came in the room and he didn't want him to see the bidding, he'd say, switch, go on the other leg.
There you go. Well, Steve,
go ahead.
We've gotten down to we're really close here on our time for today.
Uh-oh.
And I didn't mean to cut you off there, but...
No, but hey, once again, I mean, we've flowed. It's flowed for the hour. It goes by so fast.
Yeah, sure does. And also, we've got a lot to look forward to. Get the people to go to the website, IEMCV.org, and do that. And then starting next week, we're going to have actual commercials on our program. Hope our listeners don't mind 15 and 30 seconds.
No, we need sponsors.
Yeah, that we do. And but I think we're at the right time and right spot. You know, CBS has gotten us in a good spot, and they've been real good to us and everything. You know, certainly you have, and Ernest Link has.
Well, let's put the call out there. Tell them.
Yeah.
Give Scott Miller a buzz if you're interested in being a sponsor, one of the sponsors on our show, and we'll set you up with a great package.
Yeah, we'll sure do that, and, you know, we'll see what we can do with it. But, you know, like I said, and again, Steve, I've known you since the mid-90s, and I tell you what, Harness Link is one of the best things that I ever have seen as far as, you know, horse information on the standardbred bit. If it's not on there, then it didn't happen. You know,
no,
so that's
you're right.
The way I look at it. So, Steve, I look forward to you next week and
great.
To update us on all the racing and, you know, what all is going on. And let's find out about that little brown jug.
Okay.
That'll be interesting to see.
We'll get on it.
All righty, Steve. Talk to you next week.